Inside on Business, the News Hour, is brought to you by Insight Advertising, Marketing, and Communications, a full-service ad agency, InsightCubed.com, and the elite training team at Taro International. Achieve, lead, outclass at Taro.com.
We are rolling through the day, and with us in studio, you know, every once in a while, we are so blessed to have excellent guests and sponsors and folks that we work with on a regular basis, and Taro International is one of those. And with us is the co-author of the book, Your Invisible Toolbox. Her name is Deborah Renner. She is the, well, she's one of the people that makes Taro International hum right along. Good to see you again.
It's great to be here.
Wow. You just walked in. I have to tell this story. You just walked into the studio, and we've been really late today because we had a lot of news going on. But I noticed that you brought a book with you, with Your Invisible Tool, and it's also in hard copy.
It is.
Wow, you guys rock. Very, very nice.
Oh, thank you.
So let's tell folks, let's break the ice first. What do you do with Taro?
With Taro, I'm the chief learning officer, and so I work with the training team. I work with curriculum. I customize that with clients. I also do many of the training projects. I'm in the field as well. So it's wonderful, wonderful work. And then do writing for the company as well.
Yeah. And speaking of writing, you guys are involved in this project that took well over a year to complete. and I know why, because you guys at Taro are so research focused. You don't do anything without the stuff behind it that makes it true, which is, you know, which is sometimes in today's world, you know, you go, oh, wow, fact-based stuff. This is different. But this is really an incredible book. And I mean that sincerely, because I have been reading this religiously. I just read a chapter a week.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and try to work on it. So tell us, what was the hardest thing about writing this thing?
Well, it was challenging, because as we started out, it was hard to know which direction it would take. We would kind of follow a trail where we thought the book was going and how it should be put together. Mm-hmm. And then we would shift gears, and it took us 7.5 years. So over that course of time, we had a lot of little trails we went down.
Till
we
could have painted the Sistine yes. Chapel, for crying out loud.
Till we finally got to the end product. So that was one of the challenging things. And, you know, not being able to really direct it. And I've heard that about books before, that they kind of take the life they're supposed to. They take that of yes. their own, and you have to go with that. And we found that to be true.
And one of the things I love about your story is that you decided to go to Hawaii without phones and without interruptions to finish this thing.
Yes, we did. In fact, we had been in Maui several years working just 2 weeks intensively, and then we'd have to put it down, come back to do the work of Taro. And the final year, it was, we have to finish this, because mm-hmm. if we don't, it's yeah. never going to get done. And so we went, and just literally, I could hear the waves of the ocean, but we didn't do a whole lot in terms of anything but writing. But it felt so good, because we were able to complete the project.
I'm sure. When writing a book like this, and again, I hearken back to the research that's been done. This book really has as its tagline a look at how millennials are reacting in the workplace or in their career mm-hmm. choices, and I took a little. I took issue a little bit with this mm-hmm. with Roe, because I said, well, what do you mean millennials? I read this thing and I'm getting something out of it. But there's a lot of research base information here about millennials, how they think, how did you find out? Where's that stuff from?
You know, there is so much out there about millennials. And what we tried to do, we knew the invisible tools, and we chose the millennial generation because they're the largest cohort in the workplace right now, and right now they're being so labeled. And so the research, where you said we value research, we do, we're very cautious when it comes to generation research for the recent generations, because we haven't had enough longitudinal data on the things that are out there to know if they're actually definite. And so when we were taking a look at all of these labels, we found there is data out there. We use things like the Pew Research mm-hmm. Organization. There's data, but there's also a lot of opinion. And any word, you can take any word and put millennial with it, and it'll bring up a myriad of articles. So take cupcake and millennial, and you'll get an article on how to attract millennial drinkers, or how millennials are like a cupcake. It's almost comical. And so what we did, we're not validating any of these opinions or this data. We're just putting it out there and starting a discussion, and then talking about the tools a millennial can use to enhance the perceptions that are out there that are positive, because there's a lot of positive things being said, and to negate the ones that are a little more negative, and so not to walk into that bias, but be able to create perceptions that are going to be worthwhile.
And when you were doing this research, what did you find out for sure about millennials?
Well, we do know that they are they're a screen generation. They've really been in front of screens most of the time. And so not as much as the generation coming after them, but pretty much most of their lives. And so there are the technological advances, the pace of change, all of those things are the outside factors, the external factors that also create a lot of this around the millennial generation that is interesting to us.
I thought about you and your book this morning. I was having a meeting with a new business owner who had hired a young woman by the age of 27 to do the marketing. Mm-hmm. And when I asked her, why did you choose to work for this company, she gave me every single answer under the book that is underlined in your book with regard to why millennials choose various companies to work for. Because most of it is altruistic. Most
yes.
of it is it had to do with I value the values of this company and these types of things. And I'm thinking as she's talking, Deborah.
Yeah, you know, it's so true that is a trend that we see, that altruism, and also be able to individually connect. They're looking to individually connect with things that they value, that matter to them. And we have seen that trend. We've also seen their ability to do that because, for instance, if they're going to belong to an organization, to be philanthropic in some mm-hmm. way, they've got a global reach. They can really contribute to anything, and so they can match it to their interests. And so when they're looking for work, they're going to also be able to individually want to match their values to the values of the organization.
Deborah Runner, one of the co-authors of the book, Your Invisible Toolbox. We're talking about that book and some of the research-based data that came out of it. Were you pressured at all, you think? You know, here you go, you're writing a book and it's got a millennial feel to it. Were you pressured at all to make it turn out one way or the other? I mean, the reason the book is so interesting is because you have 100 chapters and every one of those chapters mm-hmm. isn't any longer than two and a half pages. That's what I think is very cool. Just the structure of the book, but the pieces in there, were you moving one way or the other?
Well, we were very careful about the fact that we would put these, we didn't want to peg millennials.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
we put all these opinions and all of the data in there, but we clearly say we don't know what really the trends or generalizations are, and we cannot endorse any of those. But they open up a conversation
yes.
for if that's the perception out there, what are the tools that I can use mm. to be able to maximize a positive perception? And actually, when you say it belongs to everybody, it does. We all need to have consciousness around those tools
Absolutely.
In order to be effective interpersonally.
I'm wondering, are there any secrets in there?
There
I mean, it's your
are.
Invisible toolbox. There's got to be a secret or two.
There are.
What do you
actually
got?
There's an original set of tools in the back of the book, and a lot of people miss that. And basically, this is a list and a description of the tools that we've really learned to use in interpersonal interactions. And they're not bad tools, but they're just perhaps not as sophisticated as some of the ones that would be in the chapters before that. So, for instance, you might have the tool of an apology. Now, an apology is an important tool if we've done something wrong, but apology just for the sake of an apology, using that tool, it's not effective. And there's other things that we could use instead that would help mitigate the situation that we might have found ourselves in. So it's a very interesting list and a very interesting description. And it's in the very back of the book by the references.
All right. So I'll have to check that out when I get back to the office. Another thing, interesting that you should say that. Apologies.
Yes.
You know, there was a study out not very long ago that women
mm-hmm.
say, "I'm sorry," at a far more frequent rate than men do, and sometimes for things that they shouldn't be saying "I'm sorry" for.
It's almost a conversational pattern. We find people even will do that in sales interactions when someone tells them the complaint, and they'll start their response with, I'm sorry, when in actuality, do you know enough about it? Are you really responsible for it? Or is this just a filler that you're using, a placeholder before you respond to whatever it is that someone has said?
Mm.
And so that's where an apology is not necessarily a useful tool. There would be other tools to use to create more understanding.
When we talk about the book, Your Invisible Toolbox, and these 100 chapters, which is amazing, by the way, is there a place where you invite readers to start? Should they start at the beginning, or can they utilize this going whither, thither, and yon?
We've had so much fun, Michael, with people's response to the book, and one of the trends in terms of responses is they like it because they can pick it up. And they can start with a particular tool, or they can start with a particular chapter, or they can start with a particular section. Maybe it's the section on global or leadership. And they feel as if they can enter it in any place and actually read it in any form, but gain from it. And that's what we were hoping for this book, is that it's so useful to the reader that they're able to get out of it what they need at that time.
And these tips and suggestions are all dedicated to allow a person to be perhaps more successful in their career and life choices?
Absolutely. Yeah. To be more successful, all of us need to examine the things that we can use in interactions that are going to make us more successful or that we can leverage.
Deborah Renner, ladies and gentlemen, one of the co-authors to Your Invisible Toolbox. It comes with my stamp of approval. It really does. And we will have links to not only Tara, but also where you can pick up this book and find out more about it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much, Michael.
All right. Deborah Renner, ladies and gentlemen, Tara International. We've got a scoot. We have had a full news day today. Thanks for hanging out with us. We will be back, God willing, tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Until then, all of us associated with the Business News Hour, Tyler Hackenmiller is our producer. The voice of Insight on Business, the News Hour, is Jimmy Olson. The program director is Patrick Wood. The liaison between our advertising agency and the Des Moines Radio Group is none other than Mary Sayer. The music that you're listening to right this moment was arranged, composed, and conducted by our good friend James Goodlett exclusively for the Business News Hour. For all those folks, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful Tuesday evening. Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good night.